This is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated December 4th, 2015. It's about 2 o'clock, and we'll start with the front page. Council considers 3 tax increases. Gloomy budget predictions are driving 3 suggested tax increases for the city of Decatur next year. The proposals presented by City Manager Tim Gleason on Thursday involve raising property taxes, utility taxes, and hotel use taxes to help cover budget shortfalls for the coming year. The Decatur City Council discussed the measures but took no action during a special study session. I don't want to raise your taxes, Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said. Nobody on this council is happy about the job we have to do in the next few weeks. City leaders emphasized steps taken in past years to cut the budget and avoid raising taxes, including the elimination of 73 budgeted positions since 2009. The city also will institute a hiring freeze for at least the first quarter of 2016, Gleason said. Council members made a concerted effort to keep the city's property tax levy relatively flat for 6 years. Gleason's proposal would raise the tax levy $1.7 million, or roughly 14.6%. With a projected 1.1% increase in property values, the tax rate would be $1.63 per $100 of equalized assessed valuation. The average owners of a $100,000 home would pay $52 more, a total of $445 for the city's portion of their property tax bill. Also on the table is a proposal to raise the utility tax rate from 1.25% to 4.25%, bringing in $3.7 million. Gleason estimates that will cost residents an extra $3 on a $100 utility bill. A 2% increase in the hotel use tax from 6% to 8% is expected to generate another $241,000. Gleason said he did not take any tax increase lightly. You will never hear me say, it's only such and such amount. I realize that every dollar for families in this community, it means something, he said. I respect that. The council is slated to vote on the utility and hotel tax proposals Monday at a meeting that will also include a public hearing on the property tax increase. The vote on that item is slated for December 21st. The 2016 budget proposal includes about $160 million in expenses, of which the city's general fund accounts for $65.5 million. It does not project an increase in sales tax and income tax proceeds, which Finance Director Greg Ziantara said make up roughly half of the general fund revenues. Past budgets included predictions that those items would rise 2% to 4%. Numbers that Moore Wolf called optimistic, not realistic. We've been perhaps too optimistic in the past when we were looking and doing budgets, thinking that the economy's going to turn. It's starting to pick up, sales tax is going to rebound, Ziantara said. It hasn't. Some of the council discussion focused on police and fire pensions and the stress that they place on the city's budget, with several council members hoping for reform at the state level. Ziantara said that the city has faced an increase of $1.7 million in pension costs from 2012 to 2015. The burden is shared with firefighters and police officers themselves, who put 10% of their paychecks toward their pension funds, officials said. Councilman Jerry Dawson said the city would pursue pension changes as a top priority through its state lobbyist. He called the situation unsustainable, as the budget has foregone road repairs and other expenses to keep required contributions. The more police officers and firefighters the city employs, the more money the city must put aside for their pensions. We're going to have to do something in the future to keep the same numbers we have, because we're going to be forced to start eating our own people to make up the difference, Dawson said. I don't see any way around it. We can't keep asking the people who have stayed here to keep paying more. There was also discussion of the need for the city to shore up its cash reserves, which are depleted despite cuts over several years to road projects, equipment replacement efforts, and city staffing levels. Ziantara said the city is on track to end the year with less than $1 million in reserves, or about 5 days' worth of operating expenses. The Government Finance Officers Association recommends having enough cash on hand to cover 1 to 2 months of expenses. We need to start rebuilding those cash reserves. We can't live on 5 days of cash reserves, Ziantara said. People who live and work in Decatur can help the city by shopping locally, contributing much-needed sales tax dollars, Moorwolf said. Every time you buy something online or in another town, it hurts this community, she said. The more all of us do to support local businesses really does matter. Beyond books, field trips still valuable learning experience despite costs. Even adults sometimes miss the sights and sounds of their hometown. We teach them about their city in class, and we also take them on this field trip to let them experience some of the things, Cindy Ventris, who teaches at Harris School, said. It's exciting to watch them when they get downtown. I even discovered some things, plaques and stuff that we didn't know were there. We talk about how small Decatur was when it first started. Field trips can introduce children to hands-on experiences that can cement the lessons they learn in the classroom. And Ventris takes third graders to downtown Decatur, where they walk around Lincoln Square, see the Lincoln sites and statues up close, and broaden their experiences. But field trips are expensive, and teachers must choose carefully which ones will be good learning experiences, because they can often only take one or two a year. The biggest expense is usually the bus, and while there are grants and school buildings have budgets for extras, it's hard to stretch the money for everything teachers would like to offer students. They see things they might not get to see otherwise, she said. The Children's Museum of Illinois and Kirkland Fine Arts Center. We feel it's really important to have in-class study, but also to get out and see what exists outside their neighborhood. The Children's Museum offers a discounted rate for class field trips, and that helps, said Roxanne Chisinal, who teaches second grade at Stevenson School. She and fellow second grade teacher Taryn Diaz took their students to the Children's Museum early in November with 14 parents and grandparents who came along to help. A field trip takes a lot of planning, and volunteers are absolutely crucial, she said, because two teachers can't keep track of 60 children in a place like that without help. Chisinal looks for experiences that will provide students with information they might not get otherwise, but also wants them to enjoy it and learn without quite realizing what they're learning. A big draw at the Children's Museum for her class was the Star Lab, an inflatable planetarium that lets kids view the night sky. Ethan Monette, 7, said that was his favorite thing about the field trip. He's been to the Children's Museum before and already had encountered things like the pretend pizza shop and the WKIDS TV station. It was too hard for Ryan Hagee, or Haig, to choose a favorite thing about the trip or the museum in general. The 8-year-old likes it all. The Decatur Public Schools Foundation is one place where teachers can apply for grants for things that the budget won't quite cover. Some recent grants for field trips included the St. Louis Symphony, the Elmhurst Jazz Festival, the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum, an Illinois Capitol visit in Springfield, Curtis Orchard in Champaign, Challenger Learning Center in Bloomington, and the Nutcracker Ballet at Richland Community College. We believe wholeheartedly in the enrichment value of travel and learning experiences away from the school setting, said Zach Shields, Foundation Executive Director. Historically, the trustees of the foundation did not fund field trips, but a few years ago, transportation funding dried up in the district budget, so our board saw it as an area of emerging need. Frequently, our teachers can organize great activities at neat places, but it doesn't matter if we can't get the kids there, she said. Community ponders K through 8 buildings. School district continues to gather building use input. The Eisenhower School cafeteria was full Thursday as community members gathered for the second meeting with the Decatur Board of Education to discuss building utilization. This isn't about a referendum, said Todd Kovald, Chief Operational Officer. We want to make the most effective use of the facilities we already have. The FACES, Facility Advisory Committee for Exceptional Schools, group, made up of parents, staff, and community volunteers, has met many times to work on options for building use in the district, based on various facts. Those include that Stephen Decatur Middle School houses approximately 350 students in a building that can hold about 1,000, while Garfield Montessori School and Johns Hill Magnet School, for example, have long waiting lists and limited space. Johns Hill, and said Kovald, has the greatest need, as it's the oldest building in the district, the least accessible to those with mobility difficulty, and a waiting list of 160. Sam Johnson, with BLDD Architects, said that the board is considering several issues, whether to renovate, build, or reconfigure, and also whether programs currently in place could be changed to better serve Decatur children. Research has shown that many students in K through 8 schools often do better in the long run due to greater continuity, but not all students do. Small groups discuss the pros and cons of leaving the programming the way it is, with some K through 8 schools, many elementary schools serving K through 6, and two middle schools with grades 7 and 8 versus moving to district-wide K through 8 buildings. After time for discussion, those groups gave reports to the larger meeting. Among the concerns of changing the whole district to K through 8 were transportation costs, keeping kids of such disparate ages together in a building and on buses and special education programs. Plus, to that configuration were continuity, convenience for families with several children, and fewer transitions for children who now spend only 2 years in middle school and lack the time to feel at home before they make another transition to high school. Yet a middle school student who spoke said moving to middle school gave her a chance for a fresh start and to make new friends after being bullied in elementary school. The next community meeting will be in March, Johnson said. FACES will wrestle with what we've heard, he said. We have lots of questions to answer. Park District seeks concrete vandals. On the day before Thanksgiving, a contractor for the Decatur Park District left wet concrete unattended in South Shores Park for about an hour. When workers returned, the concrete was covered in footprints and writing, vandalism that Park District officials say will cost $5,000 to $10,000 to fix. The district's board authorized a $500 reward Wednesday for information that leads to an arrest in connection with the incident. This is needless damage we have to fix, and that's less money we have in our budget for other programs and events, Chief Park Ranger Ed Culp said. Culp said the footprints were left by size 10 or 11 men's shoes. Someone also wrote T-bone in the concrete. The incident took place between 2 and 3:15 p.m. November 25th. Because the damage was committed to state-supported property and also because of the high estimated cost of repair, to repair the damage, Culp said it would be considered a felony. If juveniles are involved, their level of cooperation and previous record would determine how the case was handled, he said. But Culp said the size of the footprints indicated that the people involved were old enough to know better. I don't know who would be tempted by that. It's roped off with caution tape, he said. Anybody with common sense wouldn't enter the caution tape and do this damage. Vandalism is an ongoing concern for the Park District, which has faced increasingly tight budgets in recent years. It started in the Park Watch program in 2009 as a way to be more aggressive in catching people who damage park property. Upgrades to the security camera and alarm systems throughout the district are slated for this winter. To take away from other events for the community, to fix a damaged slide or this wet cement wet concrete isn't fair to the taxpayer, Culp said. Anyone with information about this incident or other crime in Decatur parks can call Park Watch at 217-422-5911. That's 422-5911. Messages can be left anonymously, but park rangers will need to will need contact information to follow up. Shining example. Old Christmas lights shine for recycling program. A Decatur County program will continue to offer a final home for those old Christmas lights that no longer help to spark that holiday magic. The Macon County Environmental Management Department has begun its annual Christmas lights recycling program, with all proceeds set to go to the American Red Cross Central Illinois Relief Fund. Lights will be accepted outside the department's fourth floor office at the Macon County Office Building, 141 South Main Street, Decatur. Lights can be dropped off from 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., Monday through Friday until January 22nd. Deb Garrett, director of the department, said the program provides another service to the community that prevents further waste at the landfill. It's just a chance for residents to get rid of those old Christmas lights that do not work anymore, she said. More than 2,100 pounds of Christmas lights were recycled through the program, which Garrett said amount to about $400 being donated to the local American Red Cross. The amount all depends on the price of copper, but it's something that we can give to a good cause, she said. The program started in 2011 when the department became aware of the number of lights being dumped in landfills throughout the area after they broke or replaced by newer lights. Copper and other materials can be gathered from recycled lights and reused in other products. In recent years, more efficient LED lights have also replaced older lights that were then thrown away. Aside from the economic impact, officials said recycling lights helps remove unnecessary waste from landfills, saves energy, and helps create jobs. For more information on Christmas lights recycling or other related programs, call the department at 217-425-4505. That's 425-4505. Or visit macongreen.com. Project Linus volunteers warmed with stories of comfort. Blankets wrap children in love. Project Linus volunteers get return hug. Forsyth, Project Linus volunteers don't usually see how the blankets they have made comfort the sick and troubled children who receive them. Yet it felt it Thursday as Alice Ann Harrop described how much they meant to four of her grandchildren after their father left the family. They placed the blankets around their shoulders and pulled them in close, the Decatur woman said. Their eyes glistened with amazement that somebody they didn't know would care enough about their pain to help them. Maybe somebody in this room made one of those. Harrop was speaking to about 120 people gathered at Hickory Point Banquet Facility for the annual Volunteer Appreciation Breakfast for the Central Illinois chapter of Project Linus. The Decatur woman told the Herald and Review, the children ranged from aged 8 to 14 at the time, but the quilt still became a close companion once they even gave names. My son-in-law eventually came to himself and came home, Harrop told her audience. But when there was a crisis and when there was pain and when there was a need, it was each of you who filled it. Co-coordinator Cheryl Hughes reported Thursday that the chapter, organized in January of 1998, surpassed the 83,000 mark on September 30th in terms of the number of blankets it has donated, creating 5,000 of those just in the past year. Mary Bologna, the other coordinator, announced changes to the chapter's annual observance of National Make a Blanket Day. She said the observance will be March 5th at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, rather than Decatur Memorial Hospital, to cut costs and simplify the event. Participants will be asked to bring sack lunches and to each bring a nice white elephant gift from home for the door prizes. We're hoping we don't have to worry about the snow. We're nervous about that when we had the day the second or third Saturday of February, Bologna said. We just need to make things a little bit easier on all of us, she said. And here's some local news briefs. Decatur, Eisenhower lockdown. Eisenhower High School and Southeast Learning Center were placed on lockdown Thursday due to an intruder in the building. The intruder was wearing a plastic toy attached to his arm and was chased out of the building by security. He's been apprehended by Decatur police and no one was injured. The lockdown was released and students were dismissed at the usual time. Oakley, accident victim identified, an 18-year-old LaPlace resident who died in a collision with a semi-truck Wednesday morning has been identified as Austin L. Brandenburg. He was the driver of a 1996 Jeep that collided with the truck on Illinois 105 between Oakley and Prairie View Roads at 8:36 a.m. Wednesday. A 20-year-old passenger was listed Wednesday in critical condition following surgery, according to the Macon County Sheriff's Office. The truck driver was not injured. Austin was pronounced dead at the scene from generalized body trauma, according to Macon County Coroner Michael E. Day. Routine toxicology tests and an inquest are pending. Decatur, Pearl Harbor ceremony. The Veterans Assistance Commission of Macon County will have its Pearl Harbor Remembrance Ceremony at 10 a.m. Monday, December 7th at the Beach House Restaurant, 2301 East Lakeshore Drive. Charleston, EIU telephone scam. Several students have reported being contacted by someone claiming to be a law enforcement officer, IRS agent, or FBI agent over the past month, according to Eastern Illinois University Police Department. In some cases, the caller advised that the student is delinquent on student loans or dues, owes federal or state taxes, is responsible for unpaid traffic or parking tickets, or has an outstanding arrest warrant. In these instances, the student is told that they have to make a payment through MoneyGram or via wire transfer to avoid arrest. The originating telephone number for some of these calls is displayed as that of an FBI field office, usually Chicago or Springfield. Authorities advise anyone who receives these calls to ask the person for their name, rank, badge number, their agency's name, and a telephone number, and say they will call back in a few minutes. Benefit for Dennis Swarms. Prairieland Abate will be having a benefit for Dennis Swarms, Abate's Chapter State Board Legislative Representative, starting at 3 p.m. Saturday, December 5th at 1901 North Railroad Avenue. He was involved in an accident and is unable to work. Donation at the door is $10, 50-50 drawing and raffles, food included. Decatur, low-income energy aid. Appointments for low-income home energy assistance program will be made starting at 7 a.m. today at the Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary Anderson Plaza. Applicants must meet income guidelines and live in Macon County. Applicants should park in the lot across the street from the Civic Center. Appointments will also be made by telephone today, started at 8:30 a.m., by calling 217-428-2193. That's 428-2193. No calls will be taken at the Civic Center. The program is administered by Decatur-Macon County Opportunities Corporation. Appointments will be issued on a first-come, first-served basis. Cerro Gordo, Christmas on the Hill. The American Legion Auxiliary Unit 117 is sponsoring the 15th annual Christmas on the Hill Festival, starting with a parade at 10 a.m. Saturday, December 5th in Cerro Gordo. Events include the arrival of Santa Claus in his sleigh, vendors, face painting, bucket raffle, and 50-50 drawing. Events will be held in the multipurpose room at the elementary school, American Legion Hall, and throughout the downtown area. There will also be a craft bazaar, a flea market, from 9 to 3 p.m. in the Cerro Gordo Civic Center. Decatur man charged for beating woman threatening with a butcher knife. A 26-year-old Decatur man was charged Thursday with 16 criminal counts for strangling and robbing a woman, holding her against her will with a butcher knife, battering a man and resisting police officers. Keith C. Brewer, who is being held in jail on $75,000 bond, was arrested November 27th after officers reported seeing him hitting a woman with his fists and trying to pull her inside a house by her hair. Officers were sent to the residence of the victim in the 1700 block of North Wichel Avenue about 3 a.m. November 26th. After the officers witnessed the abuse, Brewer ran in the house through the front door, then exited from the back door with police officers in pursuit. He entered a large nearby apartment building, but he got away because officers did not see which apartment he entered. The victim told police Brewer came to her home to visit a child, then became enraged when he could not find his phone. He began repeatedly striking her head with a closed fist, then knocked her to the couch and began repeatedly kicking her in the stomach, Decatur Patrol Officer Brandon Rolfs wrote in a probable cause affidavit. When the victim tried to call 911, Brewer took her phone. She fled to a neighbor's home, where she obtained a phone. While she was speaking to the dispatcher, Brewer found her, resumed hitting her, knocked her down against the wall, and proceeded to kick her again. Brewer left that residence, and she headed home. He attacked her again, punching her in the head and pulling her hair. That's when officers arrived. Officers spoke with a 51-year-old man who said he was at the woman's residence at 12:30 a.m. that day when Brewer struck him with a closed fist in his forehead. About 8:45 p.m. the following day, the female victim's mother called 911 to report her daughter was being held against her will by Brewer at the Wichel Avenue residence. Brewer had entered the house using a stolen key and kicking an inner locked door. As the victim tried to call 911, he wrapped his forearm around her neck and applied pressure. She pleaded with him to leave. He grabbed a large butcher knife and threatened to kill her. Her mother arrived and called police. When police arrived, Brewer prevented her from letting them in by holding the knife against her leg while she spoke to them through a window. Eventually, Brewer moved away from the window to hide from police and officers, pulled the victim and her children through the open window to safety, a police affidavit said. Brewer is due in court for his arraignment today. ADM taking lead to create foreign investment in Decatur. A group of Chinese business leaders saw Thursday how their companies could benefit from investing in the Decatur area. The group of 20 accounting finance executives visited the Archer Daniels Midland Company office in Decatur and toured the company's intermodal rail facility. It was one of the stops during a two-week visit to the United States. "We're trying to plant the seeds for making connections," said Matt Rosenstein, a global education and training director at the University of Illinois. Rosenstein leads the China Executive Leadership Program, which focuses on educational training for senior managers and leaders of companies interested in doing more international business. The group heard from ADM Ag Services Business Unit Controller Molly Strader-Fruit about how the company structures its accounting departments. The delegation was looking to benefit from learning about the best practices to conduct business in other countries. Jiang Hong said through a translator, he is Deputy General Director for the Training Center of State Administration of Foreign Experts Affairs in China, which is helping to coordinate the visit for representatives from six companies on the Fortune Global 500 list. The companies cover many sectors, which Rosenstein said includes petroleum, coal, electric power, utilities delivery, insurance, banking, railway, telecommunications, publishing, construction, materials, and logistics. Foreign investment doesn't always have to go to big cities, said Ryan McCrady, Economic Development Corporation of Decatur and Macon County President. And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated December 4th, 2015. Please stay tuned.